supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up a little later in the show, believe it or not, this is the time when people who want to be eating tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, early in the season have to start getting to work. Yes, that's why you don't have ripe tomatoes until September, because you're not thinking about it in the dead of winter. And you'll soon find out that people who want to be eating tomatoes at the 4th of July have to be doing a lot more than thinking about it right now. We'll tell you all the details after we take that heaping helping of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Eric, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Eric. How are you, sir?
Well, thanks.
Very good. And where is Eric well?
Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, right. Always a pleasure to hear from our friends there. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I've got the potential to acquire a few acres of land adjacent to my property, and it's currently being commercially farmed. And so I was curious, I think it's been farmed for years and years, decades, with just standard commercial farming practices. And I was curious if I could, how difficult it would be to turn it into an orchard, you know, to plant fruit trees, nut trees, that sort of thing.
And this would be for your personal consumption?
Well, initially, you know, because it would take years for the trees to produce.
Right.
But depending on how much I grew, I might look to sell it at a farmer's market or donate it to a food bank, for instance.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very nice. What kind of crops are being grown on this land that you wish to acquire currently?
Corn and soybeans.
Oh, man. Do you know if they're genetically engineered? I mean, the odds.
Probably.
Yeah, the odds are 90% probably that they are. Well, and how much land do you have the ability or wherewithal or whatever the word would be to acquire here?
There's about 4 acres.
Would that just be a tiny little piece of this giant agricultural industrial complex next to you, or is that the size?
It's being taken out of agricultural, and houses are being built on it.
Oh, okay. So you have an amazing potential here, because I'm sure if you're a listener of our show, you haven't been happy with what's been going on right next to your well and your family and everything like that.
That's correct.
And this way you can also block a house being there, let's be honest, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I think you are in luck. This is going to be like reclaiming like a highway. I mean, there's obviously, you know, there's no nutrition in the soil.
Sure.
They've destroyed all the topsoil. They've heavily compacted all the soil. But the good news is, even though they've been using insidious herbicides and growing insidious crops, it's all quick to degrade. So let's say you buy the land and you plow it under, and you're a really smart guy. And so for the first year, you grow a cover crop. And you're going to research this because I'm not that smart. But you're going to grow a cover crop that is really good at picking up nasty things, at bioaccumulating any kind of toxic elements. And then okay, you're going to take that and, like, destroy it. You're going to burn it. Your other option would be to buy seed for a cover crop that would fix nitrogen from the air and then plow that back under to reinvigorate the soil, put some life in the soil. You'd do the first thing if the soil was contaminated with any kind of heavy metals. You'd do the second one if it's just, like, Roundup and typical modern stuff. But, you know, the next year you can begin what's being called being in transition. Obviously, you're going to be putting in an orchard, which means, as you note, there's going to be a time delay before you pick anything. But by the third year, that you have not personally used any pesticides or chemical fertilizers on this land, that land now qualifies for certification as organic. And even then, you want to check with your local certification groups. I mean, here in my part of the country, we've got NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And they may even operate in Ohio. If not, they've got a twin brother up there. And you should contact them. And they'll explain to you the organic regulations that will allow you to claim produced organically if you're going to sell for a farmer's market or to sell small amounts to restaurants or food stores.
Great. Good news.
I think it's a great deal all around. And boy, I can't imagine other people aren't smiling like me at the thought of even a small corner of this type of production going out of business.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, great. Thanks, Mike.
All right. And research those tree crops carefully because, you know, you're getting into very difficult and complex care situations. And good luck with your great adventure.
Absolutely. Thanks very much.
All right. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Terry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Terry. Where are you?
I'm calling from Glenside, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yep.
All right. What can we do for Terry in Glenside?
I'm wondering if you have any tips for caring for my hydrangeas after last particularly tough winter. I had nice big bushes this year, not one bloom.
Right.
Anything I could have done differently?
No. Everybody got whacked. Gardeners and farmers are always subject to the whims of nature. And last winter, nature wanted to kill us. Last winter, nature wanted to kill us over and over and over again. And
Yeah. And
many of our plants suffered. I was just listening to a news report today about already the difference between the two winters in that last year with that polar vortex that settled over so much of the country, there was just no respite from the cold. It was like pounding cold wave after pounding cold wave, and a lot of plants suffered greatly. And one of those, which surprised a lot of people, is hydrangeas. Now, you can break hydrangeas down into like 80 different categories, but the important one here is there are types of hydrangeas that bloom exclusively on, quote, new wood. The shoots come out of the ground in the springtime. The flowers appear on those shoots. Most of the old mophead varieties, the big, colorful flowers whose color you can change by adding acid or alkalinity to the soil, the classic older varieties, they bloom on the previous year's wood. And 19 years out of 20, that wood is going to survive a typical winter even much further north than our gardens in Pennsylvania. But last year was not typical, and it killed all of the previous year's wood. Now, luckily, the plants were strong enough that their roots survived. So we still got that first year growth that if it had been a different variety or species, would have produced some flowers. Those are the people you saw who did have flowers on their hydrangeas, the ones that bloom on new wood. So what happened this year is, I'm sure, like as you just said, like my plants, like so many other plants, your hydrangeas seemed to be dead for a long time in the spring, didn't they?
Right.
But then they started to green up at the base, and they became very full. That is the wood that will produce our flowers this coming summer. So it's important, actually, not to do anything, which is almost always a golden rule for gardeners. What should I do? Nothing. Go on vacation. Don't
right,
stare
okay.
at the thing.
Okay, give it another year.
Give it another year. And then a trick you can do next year, in late spring when the flowers start to appear,
okay,
keep a good eye out. And when you go a week with no new flower buds appearing, then you can go in there with a pair of pruners and you can remove any non-flowering branches you like.
Okay.
That'll make it look like you got twice as many flowers, because, you know, one of the problems with hydrangeas is all the good flowers are hiding in the back.
Right.
And it's good to prune out some old wood. So just wait until all the flowers are fully formed, go in and prune out any branches you don't like, and it'll be good for the plant's future, and it'll look like you doubled your number of blooms overnight.
Great. Thanks for the tip.
All right, Terry, good luck.
Looking forward to the spring. Thanks, Mike.
We all are, yeah. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn those who live in the frozen north that you can severely injure your turf by parking on the lawn when it's frosted. Because, warns the Morris Arboretum of the University of Pennsylvania, that lovely and decorative frost is essentially a blanket of frozen daggers. But don't go repositioning your Prius just yet, because we'll be right back with tips on early tomatoes and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And by the Espoma Company, makers of Holly Tone brand organic plant food, developed for feeding hollies, azaleas, evergreens, and other acid-loving plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929, and wishing all a happy new year.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, are you one of those people who's always emailing and calling us in late August wondering why your tomatoes are still big and green on the vine? Or are you one of these people who lusts after eating a homegrown tomato by the 4th of July? Our question of the week addresses both those problems. And we'll address that question after lots more of your questions at 1-888-346-9499. Tom, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Tom. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, Tom. Where are you?
I'm in Roanoke, Virginia.
All right, what can we do for Tom in Roanoke?
So I'm new to gardening, and I started with some already grown herbs that I bought at a flower shop. I can't remember what it was, like a local nursery.
Right.
And I got rosemary, sage, different ones. Anyway, I brought the rosemary in after I thought it was going dormant in the pot, in a terracotta pot. And I followed your watering instructions. And to my surprise, it started growing inside in like an east window.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a quasi bay window with a little bit of south and a little bit of east coming through sunlight. And it started growing, and now it started flowering. And I was wondering if you can get seeds from these flowers. I tried to look it up in garden books, and everyone says just take cuttings. It's too difficult to do seeds. And I wanted to try to find if it's possible to do seeds with grow lights and stuff like that.
Well, you say you're also a new gardener. So have you done anything as, quote, easy as start your own tomatoes or peppers from seeds?
No, I haven't done that yet, but that's this coming season.
Right, right, right. So essentially what you're proposing is that you skip grade school, you skip high school, you skip the schools beyond that, and you go right to evaluating Einstein's theory of relativity. You just shoot right into it. You know, this is a case where a lot of times the stuff you read in books is bogus, but this is a case where it is not. Now, first, I congratulate you on saving your rosemary. Roanoke is in an area that's warmer than Pennsylvania, but I don't think, depending on whether you live inside the city or out in the country, there's no guarantee that rosemary would survive your winters outdoors. It certainly would not in a pot and in a ceramic pot, because you have nights that drop below freezing, right?
Correct.
Yeah. In a ceramic pot with wet soil left outside, not only would the rosemary die, but the pot would shatter.
Mm.
So, yeah, you'd make two outs in one plate appearance, which is something we try to avoid here in the gardening world. So bringing it inside is one answer. I have never had the experience of seeing it flower indoors. So that's just great. I congratulate you on that. So the little blue flowers, right?
Yeah, we've got lots of little blue flowers and more buds, or what I assume are buds, that are going to come this week or next week. I'm not sure when they'll open up.
Right. So with any seed saving, if you want to pursue this, obviously you want to pollinate the flowers. I have no idea if they're self-pollinating or they're male and female, but it can't hurt to have a little sex with them. You know, get a little artist brush, a little paint brush, and just take pollen from one flower and move it around to the other. And then, if you're lucky enough to get seed, leave those seed pods on the plant as long as possible. One of the difficulties in seed saving is making sure the seed matures, actually is on the plant long enough to reach full maturity. From the time that you begin to see a seed forming to the time it can actually grow a plant can be several months. So you really want, ideally, those seed pods to dry on the plant. And then I'm going to send you to a completely different resource, one that you would never find on your own. My go-to guy for hard-to-germinate seeds is a guy named David Theodoropoulos. And thank goodness we don't have to spell that or look that up. He runs the J.L. Hudson Seed Company out in California. And the J.L. Hudson Seed Company is a great source of rare, unusual seeds. Many, many people who've been in the business for years will look at his catalog and go, this plant doesn't produce seed. And David not only has some, but he can tell you how to germinate it. But rosemary is fairly easy to root and to layer to make more plants. You can both take cuttings and root those, and they root pretty rapidly. And if it's one of these rosemary plants that has low-hanging branches hanging down, and you can get that branch to touch the ground, all you need to do in the spring and summer is put a little rock on top of where that branch meets the ground and then pour water on that every day, and that will root. That's called tip rooting or layer rooting.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time and appreciate taking my call.
All right. Good luck, Tom.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kathleen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I am just ducky. Kathleen, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you.
And where is Kathleen great?
I am in West Norriton, which is just outside of Norristown, PA.
Just off of the Blue Route, just
That's
outside
right.
of Philadelphia.
Yes.
All right. What can we do for Kathleen in Norriton?
Well, we had a construction project going on here at our house. We built an addition that was supposed to be done in the spring. Yes. So as a result, the ground was torn up really badly by trucks and people walking over things with sheetrock and you name it. And so I'd say a third of my entire property is just this raw, muddy, yucky surface. I wanted to put down some seed and some hay in hopes that it would start taking as soon as there was warm weather. But I don't know if putting down seed now is just wasting my money because it's getting so cold.
Well, getting so cold?
Yeah, it is so cold, right.
You say you have a muddy mess outside, which is
yes.
which is to be expected. Have they regraded or prepared the land in any?
They regraded a good portion of it. Some of it, I think, could have been regraded a little bit better.
It's tough to grade frozen soil, Kat.
Right, and then they brought in soil and put some on top, and they regraded that. And come springtime, I expect that I might want to landscape a little bit and do some things anyway and build a deck and things so that it's still going to be a project. But it's just so much of the ground right now that I was hoping to do something to get a jump on spring.
Well, I mean, without Doctor Who's time machine, there's really not a lot of options here. I mean, you know, do you have a signal watch? Can you get Superman to, like, lift up your property and carry it to California for a month?
Well, the question is, if I did put down seed now, is that a waste of seed? Because will the seed sort of be killed off because it is cold? Or does seed just sort of lie dormantly and then take when it gets warm enough for it to take?
Nature abhors a vacuum. Seed is delicious and nutritious. So were you to spread a delicious, nutritious treat like seed all over your backyard in the middle of winter when animals are cold and food is scarce, you would be befriending our most favorite woodland creatures, rats, mice, evil birds, evil squirrels, voles, deer, maybe even a groundhog would be attracted by this bounty that you would spread.
Even if it was covered with hay, I guess that they don't care. They can get right through that.
Well, then they'd get bedding, too. then you're like a Walmart. You're just like they'll bring carts. you know?
Oh, geez.
So
okay.
How big is the area in question?
I'd say it's a third of an acre.
But you say you're also going to do other stuff with it.
Yes.
How much do you honestly think is going to be grass?
I'd like for pretty much most of that to be grass. And it's also in an area where the dog will be, you know, it's in the dog area.
Now, how big is the dog?
She right now is 6 months old, a Doberman, and she's 50 pounds.
Why do people wait to tell me about the dog all the time? Okay. The dog is going to make it really difficult to sow seed, even at the correct time of year. Because even if you wait until August 15th, which is the preferred time to put down cool season grass seed, the dog is going to tear it apart. Let's be honest about that. Your best answer is to fill up as much of the landscape as you can with other things, with your decking, with beds of perennials, and limit the amount of grass as much as you can. And then at least around the house, I would strongly recommend you lay sod once the weather warms up in the spring. Sod is expensive, but you start with a lawn. Or you only have to stay off of it for a couple of days while it, you know, while the roots of the sod go into your soil.
That's a good idea.
And then if you've picked a right sod, which for a dog like that would be a turf type tall fescue, that's going to be as resistant to the dogs running around as much as anything you could do. Read our question of the week on installing sod, because it's very important that you get it fresh, that you get it down right away, and that you treat it correctly. It's a big investment, so you don't want to mishandle it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Kath. Good luck.
And I really enjoy your show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Roger, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Roger. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I live in Naples, Florida, but I'm vacationing in Kentucky, and it's a little chilly up there.
Now, wait a minute, Roger. You've got it backwards, sir.
Yeah, really.
They're supposed to come to you. Isn't that why you moved to Florida? All right, what can we do for Roger? I presume the question's about something down in Florida.
Yes, it is. I'm having problems with my citrus trees. I got, let's see, about five or six. I think one of them is completely dead now, except, of course, the wild root has just sprouted a nice, big, beautiful thing. But
right, yeah.
They just don't seem to be thriving, and they're not bearing at all. And a friend of mine, he planted his in the yard at the same time. We're using the same fertilizers, and I even put this, I use a granulated mostly, and then I put this stuff. I don't have it in front of me, but it's a citrus deal you spray on the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But they just seem to be the leaves are in the, especially in the summer, they turn a little yellowish and stuff. They just don't look good, you know. And some of the little limbs are dying.
You're using a regular commercial chemical fertilizer, I presume. Do you know what the numbers on the bag are? Any chance you remember that?
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it was for citrus. There's a garden place down there. They told me 666, I believe.
Okay, so there's two things that could be going on here. One is poor drainage. Citrus are one of these weird plants. They really like a moist soil, but they also insist on a good draining soil. So, for instance, people in Southern California often have to water their plants a lot more than down over in Florida, I should say, where the water table is higher and the humidity is higher. So when it rains, does water pool up around your trees and or do you artificially water them a lot?
No, we in the winter it very seldom rains, so we do water them then occasionally, and not on a a daily basis, but occasionally. But in the summer it rains plenty, for.
And when it rains, does the water drain off your property quickly?
Yes, the part where three of the trees are is the lowest part on the property. It's near the front road where the ditch is, where the water runs to the canals,
but
it never holds water.
Right,
per se.
But are those trees doing worse, just as poorly, or better?
Worse than the ones that are up on the higher part of the property.
Okay, and the ones on the higher part of the property are doing significantly better?
Yes.
Okay. Now there's two things going on here, Raj, and this sounds like a simple situation of improper planting. Wherever you're planting fruit trees, whether it's my peaches here in the north or your lemons, oranges, grapefruit, whatever you got going down in Florida, it's important to plant them in the highest spot on your property for exactly the same reason, which is, for instance, it's my trees flower very early in the season, and we might get a late frost after that. And if we do, I'm in deep trouble. So the last thing I want is for my trees to be low in the backyard where the frost settles. Frost always goes down. Same thing. We know that Florida especially is subject to fairly frequent frosts. Let's be honest. I mean, a lot of your winters have really been tough lately on the citrus industry. And one thing that can protect the plants passively is to have them planted up high. Really make sure they have good drainage. And then show somebody from the Florida Extension these yellow curly leaves. They'll be able to tell you exactly what it is. And especially if it's a nutritional deficiency, you can just switch to an organic citrus fertilizer. And by definition, mm-hmm. that'll come with all these micronutrients that the plants really thrive on.
Okay.
All right, Raj?
Yeah, I'll give that a try, and thank you very much.
All right, good luck, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everyone with a holiday amaryllis to be sure and cut off the top of the stalk after the flowers have faded, give it the best light you can, and read our recent article on getting the big bulbs to rebloom. But don't go looking under A in our Garden Answers A to Z section just yet, because we'll be right back with tips for early tomatoes and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And by the Espoma Company, makers of Hollytone brand organic plant food, developed for feeding hollies, azaleas, evergreens, and other acid-loving plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929, and wishing all a happy new year. You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a Viking river cruise through the gardens of Provence. More at 800-423-0247 or grandamericantours.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. The secrets behind those people. You know who I'm talking about. The ones who have ripe tomatoes months before you do. Forget the 4th of July. They're eating ripe tomatoes on Memorial Day. We'll tell you how they do it after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Glenn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Glenn. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine.
And where is Glenn Fine?
I'm in Weirtown, New Jersey, on Oyster Creek.
Oh, okay. Very good. And I guess there haven't been any oysters in the creek for a long time, huh?
I don't think so.
Yeah. All right, what can we do for Glenn in the creek of previous oysters?
Well, I've had this amaryllis now for about 5 years, and each year it has bloomed and given me beautiful flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, it sprouted two new shoots on each side of the large bulb, and they grew very tall, about 30 inches high, but I never got any flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, can this be split so I could get new flowers coming?
Well, it doesn't need to be split. Have you repotted the bulb at all to look underneath the soil to see what's going on?
No, I haven't, but I would assume that it has to be root-bound.
Well, as we discussed in a show just a few weeks ago about my sister-in-law and her great luck in getting amaryllis to rebloom every year.
I was listening to that.
Her experience is that they love to be root-bound. And I'm sure since you're getting bloom every year, you're following the advice of making sure half the bulb is visible above the soil line.
Yes, it is.
And as you know, even when you got the original plant, the pot you got was not much wider than the girth of the bulb.
Correct.
So these are plants that really are designed to be root-bound. It really does seem to make them happy. What I'm getting at is your soil line may be high enough that you're not seeing where these new shoots are coming from. Are they coming up out of the soil?
Yes, they are, on each side of the bulb.
Okay. Now, here's what's going on. I want you to concentrate. I want you to look at that pot and activate your X-ray vision here, Glenn.
All right.
And what you're going to see is that your amaryllis bulb has had babies. There are small, what are called bulblets, that have grown out of the bottom of the root system of the bulb and formed smaller bulbs right next to it. The easiest way to propagate these kind of even tropical bulbs is to get them old enough that they start to have these offsets underground.
Uh-huh.
So you do not have to break them off, but when you put your bulb back into storage, to put it back into dormancy, to recharge,
right,
if you want, you can either, when you bring it back out again, you can either snap those off carefully and repot them in small pots as their own individual plants, or you can just repot the entire schmageggy into a slightly larger pot, because those bulblets are attached.
Uh-huh.
But they also have their own roots, so they eventually might fall off. But right now they can be broken off, and as long as they have a good root system, they can be rooted individually.
And I would wait till next bloom to do this.
Yes, because right now you're going to allow your plant to bloom. After the blooms are gone, you're going to cut off the seed head that forms at the top of the stalk. You're going to give it the best light you can. And then as soon as it's warm enough, you're going to move it outside in the summer and give it a good feeding so those green leaves can recharge. Then at the end of the summer, bring it back into your cool, dark cellar, stop watering it, stop feeding it, let all the greenery die off and go brown, and let it rest for 3 months. Then when you bring it out to rebloom it, that would be the time to separate out the mini bulbs if you want, or again, just to repot it into a slightly larger container. And what will happen is that your little baby bulbs will get bigger and bigger and bigger, and in 4 or 5 years, they'll begin to bloom as well.
That sounds great.
All right, Glenn?
I thank you so much.
All right, good luck, sir.
Thanks, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing?
I am doing well today. Bob, how are you, sir?
Excellent, excellent.
All right, where is Bob excellent?
Fleetwood, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay, what a great name.
Yep, and it's actually how the Cadillac Fleetwood got its name.
No.
Fleetwood Auto Body used to make those, used to make the models before they were bought by Fisher Body.
Excellent, excellent. All right, what can we do for Bob in historic Fleetwood?
I've got a Kaffir lime tree. It's about 4 years old and very leggy. I probably didn't treat it very well this summer. It dropped some leaves at the lower portion of it. But it's about 3 feet tall, and I was wondering if I could cut off maybe the top third of it and put it in a rooting powder and try to root it, or what my alternatives are to take care of it a little bit better than I have.
Okay, so you have a, quote, indoor citrus that, like most people, you take outside in the summertime.
Yes.
What kind of light does the plant get in the wintertime?
It's near a window.
All right.
And it's doing well, but it's not getting, I mean, it's not getting full sunlight.
Have you ever considered hanging a plant light over it or aiming an LED at it or something like that?
No, haven't thought about that.
Because you say it's getting leggy, and legginess is, you know, directly caused by lack of sunlight. It's very intuitive. The poor plant is trying to struggle to get taller, knowing the sun must be up there somewhere. One of the basic answers is yes. I would not take off the top third of the plant or anything like that. But you can take cuttings. Now, you want to take the cuttings, however, in the spring. And then instead of a rooting hormone, you want to take those cuttings in the spring, the new vigorous growth. That's very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to have a pot filled with a sterile soil-free mix, you know, potting soil, seed-starting soil. And you want to gently arrange your cuttings in that pot. If you really feel you need something to induce rooting, go out and find a willow tree, which are abundant in your area.
Sure.
Cut a bunch of fresh willow branches, fresh growth, into a 5-gallon bucket. Fill that bucket with water. Let it sit in a cool spot for 24 hours, and then use that willow water to do all your watering of your lime cuttings.
Oh.
The willow water contains a natural rooting hormone. And the important thing is you're going to mist those cuttings every day. You want to keep them moist. You want to keep that medium moist, the non-soil that their bottom ends are in. And you want to hang like a plastic bag, like a produce bag, over top of the thing loosely. You really want to keep the humidity around this thing as high as possible and keep it out of direct sunlight. And then, if any of those cuttings begins to regrow, then you'll know you have roots underneath.
Okay.
The alternative would be just begin a regimen of light pruning. And I would say the best time to do that would be towards the end of winter. But by gentle pruning and regular pruning, you will stimulate it to be bushier and leafier.
Okay.
All right, man?
Yeah, well, I appreciate your help.
All right. Well, good luck, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Take care, sir.
Bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. How to have the first ripe red tomatoes on the block. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please lead us into this week's question.
Well, last week, Jim near Chicago asked about the earliest fruits he could grow. You named strawberries, honeyberries, and serviceberries, but then thought, what if he means fruiting plants, like tomatoes, and promised a follow-up this week.
Yes, although I teased the answer by saying start the plants indoors under bright lights 2 months before you're going to plant them out. Use season-extending devices to put them out early in the season. Choose varieties labeled early or cold hardy, and then you can pick tasty little to mid-sized tomatoes by the 4th of July.
Really? Even near Chicago?
Yes. And this topic also touches on the huge issue of people freaking out every August because all their tomatoes are still green.
But don't you always say that's because they're growing the wrong varieties?
Well, not wrong. In fact, they're often growing the absolute hands-down best-tasting varieties. The issue is that they're growing big heirlooms with the longest possible days to maturity.
All right, Ricky. You got some splaining to do.
Yes, Lucy. All right, let's use Brandywine as an example. It's considered by many to be the best-tasting heirloom, but it's a big tomato that is famously slow to ripen, with an average days to maturity rating of about 85 days. And that's not from seed. That's when you tuck healthy, six-week-old plants into warm soil after nighttime temps are reliably in the 50s. So let's put our Chicago Brandywines out on May 15th, when we still could need a season-extending device to protect them for insurance. The earliest we can possibly expect ripe tomatoes from those plants would be around August 15th.
And is Brandywine the latest maturing variety?
Ah, not by a long shot. Some equally treasured heirlooms are rated at 100 days.
So it's September before you get the first ripe fruits.
Ah, but grow Brandywine and those other big tasty heirlooms you should, Weed Hopper. Their size and complex flavors are legendary. But to enjoy ripe tomatoes in July, you need to look to smaller, hardier tomatoes, whose DNA often hails from places like Eastern Europe, where the complete growing season may only be 60 days.
Siberian tomatoes.
Actually, yes, that's an actual variety. Also, the tomatoes in the, quote, subarctic series, which was developed in Chile, Alberta, and other legendary cold hardy varieties like Oregon Spring from OSU. But don't get hung up on finding these or other specific varieties. Essentially, you want tomatoes whose descriptions include words like early or cold hardy, with days to maturity around or just under the number 60. And you want to grow several of these varieties, as they're all going to act a little different in the specific spring weather you'll get.
And do you have to start your own plants from seed?
Well, if you want to try for tomatoes in June, yeah. You'd start them 10 weeks early instead of 6, pot them up into progressively bigger containers at least twice so they can develop deep root systems, feed them while they're still indoors, and keep them under bright lights. No half measures here. Only strong, sturdy, stocky plants are going to survive a really early planting.
Okay, but what if you can't do all that?
Then you find a source that can supply you with good-sized starts of a few different early varieties early in the season. Then follow this same basic plan, whether you personally started or bought the plants. Warm the soil in a raised bed by covering it with clear plastic for a week in advance. Harden the plants off by leaving them outside for progressively longer periods of time each day during that week. Then leave that plastic on the bed, cut holes in it, and plant the tomatoes deeply, just as we always instruct. Then provide some sort of season extension protection.
Like row covers on hoops or other types of insulated tunnels?
Well, yeah, especially if you're not really pushing it and or the weather turns out to lean your way. But most of the people who win the first tomato contests in the north protect their plants with upside-down plastic teepees that are composed of a series of hollow tubes arranged in a circle. You fill the tubes with water, the water heats up during the day, and radiates that heat back to the plants at night. The original devices were called walls of water. Many variations are now available. And the tops of these devices are always open so the plants can't overheat during a sunny day.
But then won't the tops get cold at night?
Studies show that plants react more to cold in the soil than in the air. Keeping the plastic on the soil keeps the roots warm, and those season-extending devices are going to reinforce that bottom heat.
How early can people who do this realistically expect to eat their first ripe tomato?
Master gardener Andrea Ray Chandler wrote about early tomatoes in the very first issue of Organic Gardening magazine that I edited back in 1991. Some of our advice even comes from that story. Growing in chilly USDA Zone 5, just like Chicago Jim, who got us started on this topic, Andrea reported that she had picked her first ripe tomato on May 30th of the previous year. Well, that sure was some tempting advice about enjoying early tomatoes now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with some added information about seed starting timing for different regions, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to sabotage my seed-starting setup if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, as long as you include your location, at garden@whyy.org. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Adam Staniszewski. Staniszewski, what a wine. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's webpage wonders. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor, Al Banks, well, he's almost never early. Late to bed and early to rise is intrepid Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia on an average of 3 hours sleep. Our production assistant, Peter Christian, arrives early, stays late, and sells popcorn in the stands in between innings. Our hired hand, Matt Hudecki, says, "Hey, wait a minute, these are the exact same credits you used last week." I'm not repeating, I'm recycling Mike McGrath. And I may try to get away with my clever cut and paste when I see you again next week. Yeah, yes, it is clever. Wasn't because it was late at night and I couldn't think of anything else. It was, okay. So it was late at night, okay? All right. And okay, I couldn't think of anything else, but that wasn't the reason. No, it's a different reason. It's a palindrome. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a palindrome. That's the reason, yeah. Are they a delicious fruit? Or a panacea to be pursued only under puckering protest? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll look into the truth behind the much maligned persimmon, plus your fabulous phone calls.